As part of my preparation this week, I was listening to a podcast of three seminary professors talking about the lessons for the coming Sunday. I listen to them every once in a while. They're Lutherans, so you know. They're usually fine. But one of them was commenting that he doesn't like the way this gospel lesson talks about the world. He finds it very unhelpful and isn't quite sure what to do with it. Because you see, it seems that the world is seen as this thing out there, this bad thing. I'm not a part of it. It's separate. And there's this kind of presumption of animosity between the believers and the world out there. And he would rather think of us as being part of the world in which we live, and that we're called as salt and light to be a part of that world and seek to make it better. It is true that there has always been a thread in the life of the church that sees the world as this thing out there from which we are to be separated. We see that in the what's called the ascetical tradition of the church, where people will continually deny themselves comforts and pleasures and so forth. You can see it in some elements of the monastic tradition, where people try to separate themselves off into some kind of special community that is apart from the world and separate from the world. There's a temptation to see the world as a place of evil and badness and danger and the realm of the evil one, as it even says in this gospel lesson. Now, it is certainly true that for someone seeking to live as a Christian, as a disciple of Jesus, the world brings a variety of dangers, physical dangers and spiritual dangers. It occurs to me today to just ask any mother. Do you ever watch a mother protecting her children from the world? Honey badger got nothing on a mother trying to protect her children. And so, yes, there are dangers, temptations, assaults on us physically and spiritually and those sorts of things. But I wonder, what did Jesus really mean when he talked about the world? And what did he intend our perception of the world to be? How should we see the world? And how should we interact with the world? Or, as the Greek says, the cosmos. Cosmos is the word that's used. It doesn't just mean all the nations of all the people, but the whole of creation is what's being referred to here. Well, I look back, and the first mention of the world in the Gospel of John comes right at the very beginning, in the prologue of John, the first 18 verses of chapter 1. The famous reading that begins, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God," so forth. Well, we move up to verse 9, and we read this: "The true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world." Now, that's a reference, of course, to Jesus. Jesus is the light of the world. "He was in the world, and the world came into being through him. Yet the world did not know him." And so the first defining characteristic of the world is that place where Jesus is not known. That place where Jesus is either ignored or simply hasn't been heard of, but that place where Jesus is not known. Now, our response, however, should never be superiority or fear or separation or anxiety. Remember that in in the Old Testament teaching, the people of Israel were to see themselves as the chosen people of God, but not chosen because they're separated off and walled off and better and superior and different, but they're the chosen people of God in order to be a blessing to the rest of the world. Blessed to be a blessing. And the same is true here. Remember, it's only a couple chapters later, in chapter 3, where Jesus says this, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only Son, so that everyone who believes in him may not perish, but may have eternal life. Indeed, God did not send the Son into the world to condemn the world, but in order that the world might be saved through him." Our attitude towards the world should be nothing but love and compassion and the desire to facilitate the redemption of the world by the bringing of Jesus. God did not send the Son into the world in order to condemn the world. Guess what that means? He didn't send us into the world to condemn the world either. Sends us into the world that the knowledge of Jesus, that key thing that is missing in the world, that the knowledge of Jesus would be spread. That's to be our understanding of the world. And that cannot come from a position of presumed superiority.
I know, and you don't. You poor undivided soul. So you better sit down and listen to what I have to say.
No, what we are given is a gift that we are told to then carry and share. And so that's where our relationship with the world is to be. And so we come to today's gospel and the way it talks about the world. If you've ever heard the phrase that as Christians we are to be in the world but not of the world, I put that out on the parish Facebook page this past week. That language very much comes from here in John 17 and also from a passage in Romans chapter 12. But really the main emphasis is right here in today's gospel lesson. Now remember the setting. In John 17, we have what's sometimes known as Jesus' high priestly prayer. The crucifixion, the path of the crucifixion has been set in motion. Judas has gone to get the soldiers and the chief priests to come and arrest Jesus. And now Jesus is sitting down with the rest of the disciples to pray. And the disciples get to listen in on that prayer. So this is Jesus' kind of final prayer before his crucifixion and resurrection. It covers a wide range of topics, but here's a few statements. They, that is, the people, us, who God has given to Jesus, they do not belong to the world, just as I do not belong to the world. We need to remind ourselves constantly that our home is elsewhere. Our source is elsewhere. Our truth is elsewhere. When it says that we don't belong to the world, it means that we are not part of that brood, so to speak. Our values are to be different. Our priorities are different. Our sense of accomplishment is different. Our sense of accomplishment is not the same as the world. It's not about worldly success and a good job and lots of money. It's rather about how are we a part of spreading that knowledge of Jesus to those, wherever they may be, that do not yet share in that knowledge. That's our gauge of success as a Christian community. Now, yes, we may have to get a job and do all those things. But ultimately, our task is to remember that our home is elsewhere, and it's to
invite others to come on that journey with us. It goes on to say this: I am not asking you to take them out of the world, but I ask that you protect them from the evil one. They do not belong to the world, just as I do not belong to the world. And that's tough for us to remember. We have to remind ourselves all the time. Remember, this world, it's the air we breathe. It's the water we swim in. It surrounds us all the time. That's why, as I've said many times before, the regular discipline of stopping for prayer, the regular discipline of reading the scriptures, the regular discipline of gathering with other Christians to read the Bible together, to study the scriptures together, to worship together, that is so important, because we have to counterbalance all that time that we spend eating and drinking and breathing the values and priorities and thinking of the world, the cosmos. And we are to be distinct. We are to be that people that are marked by knowing Jesus, not by not knowing Jesus. And we are sent into the world. Sanctify them in the truth. Your word is true. As you have sent me into the world, so I have sent them into the world. And remember, Jesus was sent into the world not to condemn the world, but that the world might be saved through him. And so through our work, through our contact with the world, we are to communicate that same message. We are to share that same message, that the world might be saved through Jesus, not through us. We're just the vehicles. We're the witnesses. We point for what Jesus has done. And there's a couple of things in here about how we're going to handle that, how we accomplish that. Back in verse 11, we read this: "And now I am no longer in the world, but they are in the world." So you see where we get this language that we're in the world, but we don't belong to the world. We're not of the world. "And I am coming to you, Holy Father, to protect them in your name that you have given me, so that they may be one, as we are one." One of the great themes in this whole high priestly prayer of Jesus is that we would be one, as he and the Father are one. Jesus saw the oneness of the church, the oneness of his followers, as critical to our ability to accomplish the task that he has given us. Remember, we're not being taken out of the world because we have a task to do. We have work to accomplish. By the way, that is both work within us and work in sharing that good news with other people. But we are to do that as one. And I don't mean a light, superficial oneness. I mean hard-working oneness, hard-fought oneness. Here's one of my little pet peeves about the church today, and I don't expect to change it. But I think there's a certain wisdom to the old, what was called the parochial model of the church, where you would simply draw a line and, okay, everybody in this zone goes to this church. Everybody in that zone goes to that church. Instead, what we do is we think we're supposed to find a church that suits our tastes, that has a schedule that we like, and music that we like, and people that we're comfortable with, and outreach programs that we're comfortable being involved with. And so what's ended up happening is Sunday morning remains the most segregated hour in America. And I don't just mean that racially, although that is certainly overwhelmingly true racially. Look around. But it's true in many other ways, too. In income, in education, the church is very much separated from one another, because we seek a church experience that is comfortable for us. And I would suggest to you that if we want to be about the task that Jesus has given us, to be one witness to the world and to be able to find that change within ourselves first, and then as we carry it into the world, we need the challenge. We need the struggle of having to work with people that we might not otherwise choose. We need the struggle of having to get along with people that maybe we're not comfortable with, and that maybe sometimes we find a little annoying, and that maybe we don't agree with a lot of things. And maybe we need to learn to worship with people who like a different kind of music than we do. And so we have to cooperate a little bit, compromise a little bit. And maybe we have to learn to work together with people who have a different taste, or a different way they want to do outreach, or a different way that they'd like to talk about Jesus. That all works together to shape us and form us as a Christian community that is more in the oneness that Jesus commanded and prayed for. It's not oneness in having, you know, thousands of different churches, each one with its own little style and strata, but rather that we experience that oneness that sometimes crosses big boundaries. And remember, those boundaries, they're part of the values of this world. They're not part of the values of that kingdom where Jesus is known. So we are to be one. And then we are to remember that we are carrying the truth that Jesus has given to us. It says this: sanctify them in the truth. Your word is truth. Now, we have a tendency to mishear that, because when we hear the word, we tend to hear the Bible. This is the word of God, after all, isn't it? But that's not the way John uses the language. When John says the word, he means Jesus as the expression, as the embodiment of the nature and character and being of God. Now, we learn about that in the scriptures, as we read the scriptures. But our loyalty is not to words on a page. Our loyalty is to the person of Jesus. That is the expression of God's truth. That's where we learn what it means. So our relationship with the world is not to seek escape, not to try to separate ourselves, not to fear the world. Yes, to remember that there is a distinction, that we have that gift of Jesus. But that gift doesn't make us better or superior. In fact, what it does is it places an obligation on us to carry that gift to the world in whatever ways we may have opportunity to do so. And we do so as one, as a shared community, carrying that truth to the world that all might know that Jesus. And that Jesus' prayer in 17 and Jesus' prayer in chapter 3, John 3:16, would be fulfilled.